Hello, this is Janet Gowan welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today Toby Clayman is back, and she's, why are you laughing already? This woman is more fun. I could do this every week.
Oh my God, you're so cute.
Well, let's get this.
You should tell them what you're wearing. You look so adorable.
Oh, I need a television moment for a lot of reasons. This is the least of them. But I wish people could see you too and the blue and silver tights you're wearing. And we're quite a little team.
I know.
Aren't we? Yes.
This is from Greece, my fabric, by the way.
Ah, and you had it made?
Yes, of course. I just bought a bolt of it years ago. And this is from Singapore, from a friend
there.
Oh,
a pin that you're wearing.
Yes, she's a dress designer. She has her own label.
See, this is why I need television moments. Just every once in a while, you know? So Toby had lived in Greece for some time, as you will know if you listened to her last love letters.
Yes.
But as we were kind of winding down or afterwards, you had mentioned that, and we talked about your daughter, which was just wonderful.
Yes.
And we didn't talk so much about your actual work life. That's why we're back.
Okay.
And you had mentioned that you were the one who got computers installed at Fort Mason.
Yes, correct.
And I thought that was
at the Art Center.
At the Art Center. And I just want to know about anything you want to talk about your work life, kind of with an eye towards anything you want, but also it's, I'm guessing, unusual for people who are over a certain age to be so up on every technological opportunity. So, only because you talked about how old you were last time, so I'm happy to do it again. Mm-hmm. So, will you just talk about yourself?
Well, I think that what I want to tell you is that I'm a painter, but also I describe myself as an art professor, and I'm an author, because you know I have a book out that was funded by the California Arts Council back in the day. My grant from the Arts Council was in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I moved here in 1966 from Boston. I already was an artist, and I came here with 3 suitcases and $10. One of the suitcases had a body of watercolors. I took the body of watercolors downtown to the Maxwell Gallery, and they took some and they hung them. I took some to the Atherton Gallery. They hung some. Muldoon Elder, the Vorpal Gallery, he hung some. Those 3 galleries love my work. And subsequently, I was able to get a teaching job.
Now, what did $10 get you then? 3 suitcases
and
$10.
Well, $10 got me 3 weeks at a friend's home.
Oh, I see.
I had friend here in San Francisco, and then a job typing at Kelly Girl.
Okay. So you had shelter. I forgot. You did say that last time. Yeah.
Yes. Well, my watercolors, of course, didn't sell, but since the Maxwell Gallery was the fanciest gallery in San Francisco on Sutter Street, David McKee, who was the manager of the gallery, told me, if you keep telling people you are in my gallery, you'll get a teaching job.
Yes, I remember that, yes.
So I just kept doing my work, doing my work, doing my work, and I did eventually get a teaching job. Community College hired me as a sub. And I subbed. I had 3 hours, then I had 6 hours, then I had 9 hours. I was part-time for 8 years, and I began exhibiting my work. And my work was received beautifully by Al Frankenstein and Kenneth Albright.
Mm-hmm.
God bless them. They're both dead now, but they both love my work. And
can I just say something about your work here? For those of you who have not had a chance to see Toby's work, it is astounding. And if you go online, you could actually see a photograph of her studio, which is so intriguing. It's like nothing on this earth. It's like it's large part, mostly art, but there's a feel of industry about it, because you make your own pastels and you make your own oils, and there's no color, there's no corner that isn't used for some, not just art, but production.
Well, this is the thing. I loved my teaching, mm-hmm. and I loved my painting. My first medium was sculpture in college at Brandeis. I was 20 when I graduated. I became an artist at 18. When I came home and told my parents I was an artist, they nearly died. They didn't want me to be an artist. And that was the beginning of my art life. And I was meant to be an artist. So this is the thing. Part of my teaching always has included my encouraging artists, don't listen to what other people say. Go with your passion. Go with your passion, and people will want to see whatever your passion is. And that's exactly what I did. And obviously, my parents were dead wrong. Of course, my mother's father invented the alarm clock.
Oh, yes. Talk about that.
Well, okay. he invented the alarm, not the clock. And my cousin...
What does that mean, he invented the alarm?
Well, like, it was a clock, but it didn't ring and tell you. You couldn't set it and do things with it.
Yes.
If I showed you his patent for that, his patent, it's pages long. I have the original patent.
Uh-huh.
My cousin decided, since I'm the oldest living child, I have been given the original copy of it.
So he invented the alarm by itself.
Yes, to put on the clock.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, let's say there's creativity in my family. My father played the violin, even though he didn't have enough money to go to college. He was a violinist in high school. And, you know, my family was very creative, but I think that my parents were cultivating me to make a good match.
Yes.
I think that's an understatement, to tell you the truth.
I remember you talked about that. Yeah. So please, people, so listen to the other one, because it's so interesting.
Here, you have to understand, I am a maker of art. I am a lover of art.
Yes.
I make art. I love art. I study art. I teach art. I sell art, and I give art away.
Yes.
It's all about that.
Yes.
And even when I have...
So, but you are your own manufacturer also.
You know,
this is the thing.
I believe in multiples.
Yes, because you don't just paint and go.
This is the thing. I did my first painting show. It was at the John Bowles Gallery. And Frankenstein said, "I love you, Clayman." Everybody thought I had met him, and I hadn't. And then the following 8 months later, I did a suite of serigraphs with help from two people, and I had a show of my serigraphs.
So what about multiples appeal? You just said, "I love multiples."
I like the fact that it's very democratic.
I wondered if that was it.
This is the thing.
More people can have.
You know, there is a faction in the art world where the original is where it's at.
Right.
But if you test the person and you say to the person, the Van Gogh at the museum in Philadelphia is a one of a kind. Do you want a poster of it? They're going to say yes, because they can't own the only one that exists.
Right.
So the poster edition becomes important, whether it's $25 or like Warhol's silk screens that are multiples are in the stratosphere. The thing is, a multiple means more than one person.
So more people can have it. So it's again reflects your generosity.
Well,
which is
this
a huge
is something
part about you.
I think that when people started putting paper multiples in the world in a proper way, where a lot of people that had a lot of snob appeal were swayed by it, was an artist that put a print in the Vanity Fair magazine, and then people could tear it out and frame it. And I can't remember whether it was, might have been Hockney that did that many years ago. Just like all of a sudden Hockney is doing app prints. Well, my husband and I both have been doing app prints since art apps came out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a phenomenal way to make multiples and let people have them. You email them to yourself, you print them, and then you can sell one and you can give one away.
Okay, so let's just talk about this for a minute, because this is something that really does interest me. It's using new ways of painting.
Okay.
I suppose once there was a first oil painting or a first stained glass.
Okay. I will tell you that I am the kind of artist that loves mixed media.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with sculpture, then with drawing, then with watercolor, then with painting. Then I dropped oil painting because I heard I might get Alzheimer's. I stayed with, I know people that got lead poisoning from oil paint. I stayed with acrylic painting. But then I moved into how to use my images in different ways, how to break them, how to sap the best part of my image. And I moved into using a Xerox machine for transparency, and then using an overhead projector to project my images onto canvas, onto ceramic, and so on. This is a big thing I teach, including, I know you want to get to this computer, and
No,
but this
slowly
is a big thing.
Yes.
Big thing I teach artists is it's like a search for the right mate. It's like you must keep looking. You must try every pencil, every pen,
every scale. I was just going to say, everything is your paintbrush.
Every color.
Yes.
You must try. Like, don't think it's a white canvas. You can mix your own ground and have it whatever color you want. Well, then that applies to me. And that's why when people visit my studio and they say, these are so different, I say, well, it represents 62 years being an artist. I have not just stayed on the same medium like some artists do.
Okay, that's the part that fascinates me. That's why I want to talk about the computer, because you're so adaptable.
I will talk about the computer because it is one student, a fellow named Hayden Peterson, who was a brilliant painter in my class. We moved to Fort Mason with the art department at the community college about circa 75. And I will talk to you about the computer, which came in very early on, around 80. Uh-huh. And this is what happened.
You mean for public use?
Yes. Mm-hmm. 84 was when the Mac Plus was handed to all the Stanford professors with some discs, floppy disks.
Oh, I remember those.
To stick in the front, because my roommate was teaching at Stanford, and he got a box with one of those computers in it. And now this is the thing I want to say. In 76, my student Hayden Peterson was one of the students that moved with me and my teaching from 33 Goff Street, where the art classes were in one location, to the Fort Mason Art Center. There was a connection between John Burton and Martin Snipper. Martin Snipper was the head of the San Francisco Art Commission. And one of our teachers, Elio Benvenuto, a famous sculptor, was working part-time at the Art Commission, but he was on our faculty. He and I were given tenure the same at the same time, I think it's 74. Mm-hmm. Well, Martin Snipper was asked by John Burton, ask your top art teachers, your tenure track teachers, whether they would move to a place called Fort Mason at the edge of the city. Nothing is there.
Whoa.
Empty.
That recently nothing
empty.
Was there.
My nothing goodness. There. 75, I believe.
Because it was just a deserted fort still.
That's
at
correct.
That,
and there was in Building B on the third floor one office with a fellow named Carl Johnson. He administered Fort Mason, and he was there alone. Mm-hmm. Every building was empty. And they asked four teachers. I was one of the four. Elio was one of the four. They asked an etching teacher and a sculpture teacher, and Elio and I. And we all said absolutely. We'd absolutely love a dedicated art center. And they moved us from our various locations to Building B.
Now, when you say they moved us, the people at Fort Mason?
The community college moved their art teachers, the four teachers willing to go, to Building B, Floor 1, and Floor 2. And that was in 75. Mm-hmm. No rent, $1 a year.
Yes.
And we got Elio, the painting, who taught painting, he and I, who taught painting, we got the most fantastic room. Room 200 on the second floor has a view of the Golden Gate Bridge. It was spectacular. The room was about 3,000 square feet, and I could fit 53 easels in it.
My goodness.
So I taught 53 people at a time when the class was free. And it morphed into City College subsequently, and there were a lot of things that happened from that. But there was a student, this fellow Hayden Peterson, who moved to New York to make his fame and fortune with his painting. And he became a programmer. One day he wrote me a letter and said, I want to tell you about something fantastic that's going to change the world.
Oh, my. I'm
so
touched.
This is my student. I want you to know I learn from people
I know you do.
That are younger than me
yes.
and that know different things. I always want to know. tell me something.
Yes.
Tell me.
I always feel
favorite.
Like that. Any day you learn something new is a really good
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. I need to ask, what apps are you using? Mm-hmm. I already know what I'm
yes,
using.
Yes,
you understand?
Yes, I
tell me.
Do.
I always say to me, all right, I know what I'm telling you
right.
about. Start telling me something.
Yes.
And he wrote me and he said, if I had the money, I would buy you one. And it's an Apple computer. It's a Mac Plus. You go find one and look at what it does. And that was in probably, it was just when my book was published by Scribner, which is 84, because my book doesn't have one thing about computers in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was typed by my writing partner, editor.
Uh-huh.
He did all the typing. So this is what I did. I went down to the district office of the community college at 33 Gough Street. And I remember the fellow's name. His name was George G, G-E-E. He was all alone there. He was put there with computers mm-hmm. waiting for faculty to come and learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
He was all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there a few afternoons a week writing down cut, paste,
uh-huh.
click, copy.
Yes.
It was a new language.
That's
oh,
right. Things that are
goodness.
Just so automatic
what is
now
this?
To every 2-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so odd. Yeah.
And so that began my education with a computer. So it is funny. I find it really amusing since how many years ago was that? 85. It's 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I was at Fort Mason. I had published a book. My reviews of my art were rave reviews. I loved my students. Classes were full, even though we had a big tuition then, because things changed over there. Greens came in. They wouldn't hang our posters.
Uh-huh.
They weren't a friendly neighbor. The administrator, Kyle Johnson, was replaced with Mark Caskey, who made big deals in order to get ADA access on
so,
every...
Yes.
It became amazing. But I wouldn't worry about Kyle Johnson because the first director of Fort Mason that had nothing to direct used to come and visit me at room 200. He was just upstairs. And he said, I'm leaving, but don't worry because I've got something great happening.
And which was
and
what?
Which was he became Bill Irwin's agent. He said, I found the most fascinating guy in the world to help with his career. Bill Irwin. This is like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So anyway, what happened was, as time went by, I really understood the computer had to get into the art center. And I formed a committee in my business class because I taught a business class.
Oh,
I formed
let's
a committee. Yes,
yeah.
I wrote a book to help artists with their careers, and it came from a class I taught for many years.
Okay, well, let's talk about business and art in a minute.
Yeah.
So people were resistant about having computers
yes,
put in?
Yes, the faculty wanted a new loom, a new etching press, a new photography station, and why do artists need computers? And I explained to my director, you never would have to retype a resume again.
Uh-huh, yes.
And it was like, never mind the whiteout. The whiteout is over. And never mind rushing to a graphic designer just for one change of font.
Right.
You've got the world at your fingertips now, and you can manipulate things. This was a time of super paint and things where you had to have the program in order to put the disc in and have it work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You couldn't go from the Fort Mason Arts Center to California Lawyers for the Arts with your disc unless they had
That's
the
right.
program.
That's right.
Well, my director was too afraid I was right, and he let the school buy me one computer, and he built a closet inside my business classroom. And that's how the lab began. And by the time I retired, we had, you know, an end view for the whole class to learn about.
Well, by the time you retired, I see children now. I mean,
yeah.
who were two.
I retired 20 years ago. It's 19 years ago. But there were a lot
yes.
of computers in there.
But now, you know, when you think about it, you see 2-year-olds with their own iPads.
Yeah. Of course, they should have them.
Yes.
It's
and
the library at your fingertips.
It's the library. It's the new
yeah.
ballpoint pen.
Absolutely.
Alas, and apparently it's the new paintbrush.
It is a new
yes.
paintbrush.
Yes.
There's no question about it. Now, the first thing is I don't use it that much, but I do love it, and it has caused a sensation for my husband. He's taken to it, like, you know, amazing. But my favorite one, there are seven my husband uses. And the first one I used was called Whiteboard.
What is that?
Whiteboard is just an art-making app.
And so you start, because it's a blank sheet, is why it's called
Whiteboard? Well, it's the name of the app itself. You have to get it, download it, and open it up. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to... Yeah.
Don't go too far away.
Yeah, hold on a minute.
Okay.
Can you stop it?
I wanted to talk to you about business in art, if we could, because you've got such a clear handle on that, and which I've always noticed. And now you are saying that you taught a business class.
Yes, I did teach a business class.
So talk about apps and computer and business.
Well, first of all, talking about the art apps and how interesting they are, and of course you need a smartphone or an iPad, or you can use a Droid system too. They're also, if you buy an art app from an Apple, then you're at the iTunes store.
Mm-hmm.
But Google Play is the store for Droid. So you don't need to have an Apple in order to do this. I'm going to tell you the name of the favorite apps.
Okay.
One is Whiteboard. Uh-huh. One is SketchTime. One is EasyDraw.
Mm-hmm.
One is ChalkDraw. One is LuxDraw. FreePaint. And one is called Draw. And I will tell you that what my husband, Joe Branchcombe, uses is 10-1 Design Pogo Sketch. That's the stylus he uses.
Mm-hmm.
It's only $12. There are many of them out there for much more, but that's the best one. It's called 10-1 Design Pogo Sketch. Mm-hmm. But what I want you to know is that I did write a book to help artists with their careers, because when you have 100 drawings, 100 prints, you can't do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out how to deal with them. And that's what my class used to be about, what you do with your work. Well, you have to sign it, price it, title it, copyright it, and then you have to document it.
Are you unusual in the world of art in that you have both such a creative strength and also such a practical strength?
I don't think so. Okay, I just think one thing needs to be woken up, because mm-hmm. I've got hundreds of students now who are very good at what I'm very good at.
In fact,
a couple of them recently visited me. Liz Roth is a professor of art in Oklahoma. She mm-hmm. just visited. And Sarah Kleiss, I think, is on her 16th children's book.
Okay.
She just visited. She illustrates her sister's stories.
So it's been helpful not to draw a distinction between art and business, which very much used to be.
You know, it's just a way to keep artists down, in my opinion.
I think
it's a muscle that needs to be exercised.
Okay.
And I say, if you learn how to keep records, you spend less time dealing with it and more time in your studio. Everybody thinks I like doing my taxes. The answer is no, I don't. But yes. I know how to do them quickly.
Yes.
Because of how I organize. And that's what I've taught.
Oh, good. Okay, so go ahead. Get back to what you
teach.
Yes,
well, my teaching is, I have the art side with the mixed media and pastel making and mm-hmm. oil paint making, and also how to get through a slump and all that. I'm very good with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But my other side, my business side, is about intellectual property. I'm actually an expert on intellectual property.
Good for
copyright,
you.
Royalties.
Uh-huh.
I've been an expert witness in court cases about this stuff.
A whole new
and
world.
My book was really the first book, except for I think an entrepreneur, a producer named Goodman, who was an accountant, wrote the first book for artists. But I wrote the first book for artists that was about the productivity and how to stay an artist.
Yes, because that seems so important. If you're an artist and a wonderful one,
how to stay an artist,
then you're actually helping people enjoy what you do because you know how to get it to them.
That's right, and that's what I teach. That's part of what I taught, and I taped my lectures for 10 years. One of my collectors, Cobbett Steinberg, he wrote the history of the San Francisco Ballet, by the way. He wrote mm-hmm. 8 books, and he helped me write my book. It was his 5th book. And so my book is called The Artist Survival Manual. It's still in print, and you can find it on my website.
I'm going to look at it.
Yeah, you can Google it. Okay, now, this is what I did want to tell you, though.
Hmm.
You used to have to get a publisher to publish a book. Now you don't have to do that. You can make your own book.
Mm-hmm.
There are apps that are bookmaking apps. There is Simple Prints. There's Mosaic. There's Blurb.com. There's a book called, there's a company, there's a book you can make in Smashwords. If you publish a book in Smashwords, they will get it in the iTunes store.
Mm-hmm.
So the world has opened up now.
Yes.
Because of all the apps. And this is something that I teach now when I teach the business part of my class. And this is something that I've learned and I've developed for my husband, Joe Branchcombe,
and
myself.
You've also gotten past something else because you have not, you don't have the soul that is dependent on what other people say for your particular anything. I mean, you know how to take yourself where you want to go and not be, you know, you said a little while ago that that was a way of keeping artists down.
Well, there's another way of keeping artists down.
But you can publish your own, and there used to be quite a snobbery against that.
Yes, and also, this is the thing. Exhibiting in your own space is important, too. Gallery owners always like to show artists' work, but they take 50%, and right now, in my case, they want my mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
And why would I submit my mailing list to a gallery that wants to take 50%? I might as well send my mailing list out myself.
Right.
It's good to get a gallery if you need reviews and a show downtown, but to give a gallery 50%, using your mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of galleries, or some galleries I know, don't want to give the artist the name and address of the collector that buys.
Oh.
They're afraid the artist is going to go
direct, of course.
Which no good artist, no honorable artist would ever do.
Okay, that's good to know.
Absolutely never do it. Without a doubt, I would never do it. When my prints were in the Marquardt Gallery, they had a wall for me year-round with four of my serigraphs.
Mm-hmm.
I used to pay them a commission even when they didn't send people to my studio because I had a wall on Gold Street downtown year-round. Artists are not do not lack integrity. Artists can be poor and need a second job.
Yes.
And if you look in the grants downtown, you look in the libraries, you can find that artists have 800 jobs they can do. They have to find the job with the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my goddaughter in New York, Lucy Owen, is a brilliant actress. And she's been waitressing and modeling.
Sure.
And next Thursday, she's going to be in an episode of a wonderful popular TV show.
Nice.
You know, and she's a completely talented and exquisite girl, and she's 35.
Mm-hmm.
She's moved to L.A. from Mill Valley, and now she's moved to New York over the last 5 years. And what I told her was, you're 35. My first show, I was 36.
Uh-huh.
So that's how it is.
Yes.
You're paying your dues.
Okay. That's you've got to be the world's best teacher.
You're paying your dues.
Yeah.
And you better enjoy it because you have the best job in the world. You have a calling that you make pictures. A lot of people don't make pictures. And, you know, if I was a brain surgeon, I'd be proud of that too.
Sure.
So what?
Sure.
You know, you're put on this planet to do certain things,
And if we all do something, the ship stays afloat.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I feel
and
that.
Everything is important. I don't think
right.
being an artist is some precious thing where can I touch you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So, but I do want to tell you that things have turned in an interesting way for artists to be able to do their own selling and do their own pushing of their art in order to make themselves known. In the old days, you would have to go to my website. Then you could see when I was born, what year I taught. You can see that I had a house in Greece for 25 years. You can see a picture of my daughter and my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the problem with my website is a programmer had to put in any new images.
Oh, sure.
He's in Germany. That's part of the deal. Okay?
Right.
They had control. Not of the HTML. I wrote all my text, and I can mark sold if you buy something that's on my website. But he would have to insert images. Okay. Enter Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Enter Pinterest.
Mm. Oh, Pinterest. Okay, go ahead.
Both. Uh-huh. Pinterest and Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, Toby Klayman has two Facebook fan pages. Mm-hmm. I put whatever I want on there. Nobody has to help me. It's as easy as pie. And you don't have to be my friend to see it. Mm-hmm. You do have to go on a Facebook account.
Right.
So I encourage all artists, make yourself one Facebook page or two Facebook pages. And the same with my husband. He has his own yes. Facebook page. It's in addition to his website. And when people order a piece of ceramics from me, they say, are those cows on your website? Do you still have them? And do you have any new ceramics? I tell them, go to my Facebook pages. Everything new is on there.
So, you know, I used to see Facebook as the neighborhood where people used to kind of hang over the back fence to chat. It's the new back fence where people chat. But I can see it's also the World Gallery.
You don't understand that I get a messenger, a little ping on my
phone. Yes.
And it's somebody who wants to order something.
Yes, I can see. Yeah. Yes.
And the other route with this whole smartphone iPad business mm-hmm. that was, by the way, of course, my Facebook page is administered by a young man who lives in Cambodia and owns a tattoo parlor mm-hmm. and is a music promoter, uh-huh. the son of my Scotland friends. He came and visited, and I was wondering why the first time he visited, he was on my computer night and day. Uh-huh. The next time he visited, he told me, I'm on Facebook. And I said, why aren't I on Facebook?
Yes, right. Okay.
And so he made me a page. He made himself my administrator. He showed me how to ask all my email people, do you want to be my Facebook mm-hmm, friend? Mm-hmm. And then he taught me how to administer my husband.
It's a lovely borderless world, isn't it?
Yeah. Then somebody else told me, a young man from Delaware who visited our cottage, I needed to be on Pinterest. I asked him, tell me about your apps. What are you doing? You need to be on Pinterest. You need to have an art for sale board on Pinterest.
And have you gotten a lot of traffic
yes.
there?
Yes. Yes, I get people asking.
Yeah.
People don't have to always come here. If they come here once or they've seen a postcard or a sticker or whatever. So I recommend this to all artists.
Okay.
Artists who say, oh, I don't collect recipes. Oh, I don't want to mm-hmm. put my favorite shoes on there. By the way, I do have a board called Leopard that has shoes on
it. Oh, I'm gonna come to that.
Yes, I have some. I have some things on Leopard on one of my boards. I can't help it. I'm a regular person.
Yes, yes.
But I have an art for sale board, and that's important. And it's just kind of like my teaching in the old days, where I would tell my students, "Here's my consignment receipt." If your gallery won't sign this, protecting uh-huh. your copyrights, protecting your address and name of your collectors, do not go with them. Do not leave them.
Oh, gosh. You know, okay. I'm just so glad you reached
so many. The end of my book is my consignment receipt. My book is all over the country in all art libraries, all over the world.
All of you should be all over the country and
but
all over the world.
But the thing is,
you're just
endless. If you Google it. But there are several books since then that have come out. Where, you know, some of them, are, you know, I like and admire and some I don't, but I don't care. I'm in there. You know, my book is in there.
I have a question to ask you. And I know we don't have enough time to do what I'd like to do is listen to you for 24 hours straight.
Hey, you're a dog. Love you.
No, I just like listening to what people, you know what I'm saying? I know what I think. I love learning what you think.
Yeah.
And your scope is just endless. Here's the question. You started off saying, you know, that your parents, your mother, I don't know if it was your mother more than your father, but, you know, we want our daughters to be safe in this world. And so I think that's why a lot of mothers want a good match, and that's kind of an old view of how to be safe.
Well, they had best friends with a son.
Yes. And you'd have had some kind of position of safety in this world, according to her.
Tons of money.
Yes. So looking now at your life, I'm just wondering, knowing what you do about your own family, would your mother, if she could see what you've accomplished today, be just blown away, proud of you, and be able to say, golly, I'm sorry I almost took you down the wrong road, kid.
Well, you know, the thing is, my mother did end up loving my work.
Oh, okay, so she...
But my mother never came here.
Uh-huh.
My parents never came to California.
Oh, but so she knew...
Oh, yeah, of course. I gave my family, my whole family has my work.
So they could all see that you ended up on the right.
Yes, my father told, they were proud of me when my book came out.
Okay.
Because they understood what a book was more than art.
Yes.
Yes, but a lot of people are that way. You have to say to somebody, if you don't like my work, just go to the museum. They made art and it got in that big building over there.
Right.
I make art and it's going where it's going, you know?
Yes.
There's another component.
That's a little sophisticated for people who need something tangible to see.
Well, the book was the big turning for my parents. 84, when my book was published by Scribner, then they could say their daughter had a book.
Yes.
Of course, I'd been, I graduated in 1956, so it was a long time coming for them to have anything to be proud of. They never came here to my shows or my...
they could have. They were able to do it.
Oh, very much able, but they were... I disobeyed.
Yeah. No, I understand that part. But,
yeah.
Well, thank you for doing this with me, because I just love hearing what you have to say. And as far as, you know, usually I say who gets your love letter today, but we're going to just mention that the first love letters that you did had a love letter, was kind of centered around a love letter that changed your life and your daughter's. So I'm going to say to people, listen to Toby's other love letters for an astounding, really heart-rending, joyful, you'll have tears, get a box of Kleenex, rendition and version and explanation of the power of a love letter to a long-lost daughter.
That's
thank
correct.
You, darling, for doing
you're
this
welcome.
With me. I look forward to whatever's next.
Yeah.
And for
all
now,
right,
I'm just going to say, this is Janet Gallen, kind of unwillingly saying
it was
goodbye for now.
To have you visit me.
Thank
I
you.
Was trying to-